this truth of the head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Your Life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and it's so good of the Kansas State Board of Education to mark the 7th year anniversary of my debate with an evolutionist by beginning their hearings on the anniversary of that debate. In Kansas, they are discussing whether or not they're going to continue teaching evolution in their public schools the way they have been, or perhaps modify it with actual scientific evidence, which shows that evolution, Darwinian evolution, is not true. But 7 years ago this week, I debated an evolutionist who travels the country and the world trying to refute creation. Her name is Eugenie Scott. She has a PhD in physical anthropology. And on this show, I'm going to play you a few clips from that program. And it'll be interesting to see, for one, what I was up against, how resistive she was, but also her primary argument has been completely debunked in the last 7 years, completely. And her primary argument was this, that junk DNA proves that we were not created by God. Because what evolutionists have been saying, and in fact, my rebuttal to that, it turns out, was exactly on target and correct. Evolutionists have been saying if a God created us, our DNA would not be so messed up. Most of our DNA, they say, is junk. And the junk has no function. And also, you find the same kinds of pieces of junk between humans and chimps and related species, is how they put it. And so, therefore, it's proof that we've evolved from chimps. And so, Eugenie Scott believes that she evolved from a monkey. And here was really good evidence. And I said, Eugenie, we are just beginning to learn about genetics. We're in the beginning stages of understanding. And in fact, we will likely find as we learn more that there's all kinds of functionality in junk DNA, in pseudogenes, in the pieces that we think have no functionality. We're likely going to find out that there's tremendous functionality. And she denied that and said, we know everything we need to know to determine conclusively that this stuff is junk. And in fact, now you could go to the scientific journals, the evolutionist journals, Scientific American, Science, Nature, Cell, go to the BBC, just any news source you want and investigate. Just spend a couple hours, junk DNA, and you'll find out there's a huge amount of evidence. Now they know that junk DNA is not junk anymore, but it's vital. It's vital. There's a child's disease. I can't even pronounce it. It's called AT. And there's a little tiny piece of junk DNA, a little tiny piece of junk, what they call junk. And if it has the slightest little change in it, kids come down with this disease. It's called AT for short. It's ataxia telangiectasia. That's it. Ataxia telangiectasia, or AT for short. And the brain begins to degenerate, and the child loses muscle control beginning by about his second year of life. And eventually he slurs his speech. He has to go in a wheelchair, and they usually die in their teens or 20s, rare to live beyond that. And there's no cure. And you know what? We may have been finding a cure years earlier, but because of these evolutionary assumptions, well, this stuff is junk. This doesn't do anything. So now let's take some of the clips from way back when, 7 years ago, and in honor of the anniversary. And by the way, you could get this from us on a DVD. You can buy the DVD, the full hour debate, or a VHS tape. And it's a lot of fun. Bob debates an evolutionary scientist. Let's hit the first track.
Greetings. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Today I spoke to a biologist from the University of Colorado who has a master's degree in zoology. I mentioned to him the name Eugenie Scott. I said, have you ever heard of her? He said, oh yes, I've heard of her. I said, do you think she believes that things have evolved functions like sight, mobility, hearing, flight? He said, Bob, she is an avid evolutionist. Of course she believes those things. And I then told him that I plan to debate evolution versus creation with Eugenie Scott. And he said, oh boy, she's good. She's going to win. Well, I thanked him for his encouraging comments. And I told him that I was going to ask Eugenie for her three best pieces of evidence that new features evolved in higher species. So I plan on asking Eugenie Scott that question. What are your three best arguments to show that new functions have evolved? I'd like to welcome to the program the executive director of the National Center for Science Education. Welcome, Eugenie Scott.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing very well. And Eugenie, I appreciate you coming on the show. My advantage of hosting the show in this debate might be somewhat offset by your advantage of having a PhD in, I believe, physical anthropology.
That's correct.
And so I hope it goes very well, and I hope it's instructive for the audience. Could you begin, Eugenie, by letting us know what you believe are the three best evidences that show that new features have evolved in higher species?
I don't really know what you mean by the question, Bob.
Okay, stop the tape, stop the tape. That's what I was up against for an hour. I had just introduced her. She was on hold. And I said that I want to know what kind of evidence Eugenie Scott can point to that eyesight has evolved, flight, hearing, legs, mobility, you know, any higher level function of an organism. Give us three pieces of evidence, your best, that any of these things have evolved. And this is what you're up against when you debate an evolutionist who would prefer to obfuscate and be coy and hide and waste time. But we're going to go to the next track now. Same thing. I want you to hear it again.
Could you begin, Eugenie, by letting us know what you believe are the three best evidences that show that new features have evolved in higher species?
I don't really know what you mean by the question, Bob.
Okay, now, so we'll pause it there again. And so you see what it's like. This is what it's like debating an evolutionist, and it's common. But now we're going to get into an interesting aspect of the debate itself. We'll talk about a couple things in these excerpts. One is just briefly about the fossil record and also about the pseudogenes, and that pseudogenes were proof because we knew beyond any doubt, we had it all buttoned up, that pseudogenes are proof that there is no God that created us because pseudogenes have no function. All right? And now, like I said, 7 years later, it's overwhelmingly obvious to the entire atheistic evolutionist community that the things we thought were junk DNA are loaded with vital function. Let's take the next track.
Actually, I want to finish off what I was starting to say when we had to break for that commercial. Was when we were talking about evidence for evolution versus evidence for special creation. And I wanted to ask you about something called pseudogenes, which are sections of genetic material that don't have any function. If they were turned on, they would just put out gibberish because they don't have any, they don't code for any real proteins or any enzymes or anything like that. Why is it that you find pseudogenes that have exactly the same sequence of amino acid bases in closely related forms, but you don't find them in distantly related forms?
Eugenie, it took scientists a century to figure out what some of the higher structures in the human anatomy do. What do they do? Like the pituitary gland. It's somewhat conceited of us to say we fully understand genetics and we know that this material has no function.
Okay, fast forward from that to today. We're 7 years later. And for example, I've got some really neat quotes here from creationist publications in Answers in Genesis Technical Journal, TJ, and showing all the functionality that we now know of in what used to be called junk DNA. But they're creationists, right? So people, liberals in the audience won't believe them. But how about the BBC? Is the BBC, what is it, a Christian fundamentalist group? No. The British Broadcasting Corporation is atheistic in its worldview. It is evolutionary in its origins, beliefs. So here's an article. You could just go to Google. Just Google junk DNA and the BBC. It'll pop right up. First thing. Junk throws up precious secret. All right? A collection of mystery DNA segments which seem to be critical for the survival of many animals are causing great interest among scientists. Researchers inspecting the genetic code of rats, mice, and humans were surprised to find they shared many identical chunks of supposedly, quote, junk DNA. This implies the code is vital. Vital. And we know now that pseudogenes, they have functions. They regulate cell activity. And it's becoming so clear that our evolutionary assumption held science back for years on getting a better handle of what's going on genetically. Because of their assumption that, hey, this is all evidence that there is no God. And so they didn't look at what they called junk right off the bat carefully enough. Let's go to the next track.
If we are clever enough to be able to sequence a protein so that we know the exact order of amino acids and we know exactly what that protein does, that protein is not doing something else. It's not our ignorance. It's the lack of willingness to admit that this is a non-functioning protein.
Oh, wow. Now, that is amazing what Eugenie just said. By the way, we just got a $500 donation in. And we're not even doing a telethon, but boy, do we need funds. So, Bob and Your Live, to help us stay on the air, please feel free to call and order something like this video. Get it in a VHS or a DVD. Bob debates an evolutionary scientist, Eugenie Scott. You'll just love it. But at any rate, she just said, look, we know how to sequence a DNA. A protein. We know how to identify what amino acids make up that part of the DNA. And therefore, she assumed that means that we know what it does. You know, what it is and what it does are two very different things. And in fact, we did not know what it does. She said she believed, as the evolutionists generally all did, that this was just junk. And this junk was overwhelming proof that there was no God who made us, but that we've evolved by mutations and accidents that were then retained by natural selection. And it turns out that these pseudogenes have incredible function. And you take one little piece of junk DNA and you alter it slightly and children die. So guess what? The BBC is right. Nature magazine is right. Scientific American is right. This junk has vital functions that we're only even now beginning to learn. Let's go to the next track.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think on the subject of genetics and what different genes and bits of information in the DNA code for and what they do not code for, do you think we have most of that knowledge, or do you think we are still to gain most of the knowledge of understanding how genetics works?
There's a lot of knowledge that we still have, that we still are learning about all the time.
Right.
But that's irrelevant.
That's irrelevant
to pseudogenes.
Irrelevant to pseudogenes. So her point, and she said elsewhere in this interview, we're only playing excerpts, that we're over the hump. We've learned most of the basics of what we need to know with a certainty that junk DNA is junk And it is powerful evidence that we were not created by God. And then she accused us of, because of our bias, this evolutionist scientist said, because of your bias, Bob, you can't see the evidence. But in reality, and I had scientific arguments also, reasons for my conclusion, but in reality, it was her bias and the bias of tens of thousands of scientists around the world who kept them thinking and hoping it was junk when it is vital. Junk DNA, pseudogenes, and introns, and other pieces of junk DNA that had no function except you might die without them. So let's continue.
Eugenie, maybe we could set up a ground rule. For every question of yours that I answer, maybe you'd answer one of mine.
Still trying to answer your first one.
Eugenie, do you think we have most of the knowledge that there is to have, possess about genetics? Or do you think we're mostly still in the dark with the majority of the knowledge still to come?
Oh, I think we're over the hump.
Oh, you think
I think
know
there's
more,
plenty more to Eugenie? Learn, but we got the basics.
Okay, Eugenie, this is what I want to do. I want to date this 1998, May 5th. Eugenie Scott, a degreed scientist, has said.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to take, I think we got one more track left. So her point was, hey, we have a lot to learn, of course. There's a million species of animals. We've just begun to look at all their DNA. Yeah, there's a lot to learn generally, but the evolutionists were telling millions of students as though it were fact, it were scientific fact, that this junk DNA proves it's a strong proof of evolution. And you could trust us. And so in my ignorance as a conservative Christian talk show host without a PhD in any of the physical sciences, I would look at the human organism and compare it to a chimpanzee. And evolutionists were saying, well, now that we're figuring out the human genome, we know that there's only a tiny difference between the human genome and the chimp genome, and other than that, we're identical. And I assumed at the time, and that prediction also has come true, that the difference was significantly more than evolutionists had been claiming it was. But not only did they say that just a tiny fraction of the genome is different between humans and chimps, but that 90% of the human DNA is just junk. It's nothing. It doesn't do anything. And so the vast majority of your genetics do nothing. And of what's left, there's only the slightest difference between a human and a chimp. And now, if you're an evolutionist, you'll pretty much believe anything. But I would look with my eyes and think with my reason, and I would say, you know, I'm a programmer. I know how to program. I've worked for Microsoft and McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company. And if I had to program a chimp, a simulator to act like a chimp, versus program a simulator to act like a human being, the amount of code that would be necessary to differentiate the two would be extraordinary. It'd be just a huge amount of coding difference just if you look biologically. And so intuitively, I believe that what they were saying about junk DNA and just the slightest sliver of a percent is the difference between chimps and humans, I would just open my eyes and say, no, chimps and humans are a lot more different than that. And so your assumption that all this stuff is junk, really, you just don't know what it's doing. And you're using your ignorance as proof for your theory that we've evolved by natural selection. So let's do the last clip.
I'll state what my position is. Most of our learning on genetics is yet to come. And we are getting ahead of ourselves when we state that this part of this DNA chain is useless. It's meaningless. I'm saying that there is much to come that we don't know about yet. And in the future, we'll find out all kinds of things about DNA that we've never known before. And so one of your big arguments you're presenting to the audience is that there's parts of the DNA chain that we don't know.
I'm not talking about silent regions that we don't know the function of. I agree with you completely. There's a lot to be learned.
Even the we know some of the functions. Genes have all kinds of influences on different parts of the body that we're just learning about. Isn't that true?
Right, but if you've got 100 segments...
Hold on. Folks around the country are going wild over the plot. We've been overwhelmed with comments about how the plot has helped people to understand the Bible. Order your copy of the manuscript that's helping Christians get to know the Bible better and clearing up many problem passages. You'll get 310 pages of serious Bible teaching that's changing lives. Call 1-888-ANYART. The manuscript is $49.95, or send what you can and others will help us send you a copy. The debate about capital punishment is about justice. We take justice seriously at Bob and Yurt Live, so we're offering our two-hour video that explores the New Testament support for the death penalty. Be prepared with biblical evidence the next time you find yourself defending the death penalty against some soft-headed liberal. Call 1-888-8-NYART. It's $34.95 or whatever you can afford. 1-888-8-NYART. David, we'll go back to Eugenie here. David Berlinski, writing in commentary, September 1996, said, "No paleontologist writing in English, French, or German denies the gaps in the fossil graveyard where there should be intermediate forms. There is nothing whatsoever instead. It is a simple fact. Darwin's theory and the fossil record are in conflict." That's David Berlinski. Back to Eugenie. Eugenie, go ahead.
Well, I hate to say this, but I don't think David knows very much about the fossil record.
How about Alfred Fisher from Grolier's Encyclopedia I quoted in the last segment?
Beats me. I don't know Alfred Fisher. And well, I think, didn't you give a date of 1958 on that?
No, I gave a date of 1998. Grolier Encyclopedia, you have heard of that, right?
Yeah, but I don't know this guy Fisher.
Well, he was the evolutionist who did their article on fossils, and he said one of the most difficult problems has been the almost abrupt appearance of the major animal groups. This must reflect a sudden acquisition of skeletons by the various groups, in itself a problem.
What do you suppose he means by problem?
What he means by problem is that the fact that you have 32 orders of mammals that suddenly appear in the fossil record...
Wait a minute. 32 orders of mammals don't appear. I suspect he's probably talking about the Cambrian explosion.
Well, in fact, there are 32 orders of mammals. If not, you let the audience know. Where in the fossil record does it show the evolution by the fossils of mammals?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Suddenly. How many orders of mammals are there? Are there 32 or no?
Beats me.
And that's it for the clips, because we have a half-hour show these days. Hey, if we keep getting donations like that, maybe we could increase the show to an hour. We would love to do that someday. So that's what it was like debating Eugenie Scott a year ago. And people who sign up to our monthly subscription for a video a month from Bob and Yurt Live, they get many of the videos we produced, like God and the Death Penalty, Mount Moriah, a Bible tour of Israel, so many really neat videos. When I debated an entire philosophy class and their professor, it's titled Get Out of the Matrix. Great videos. And this is one of the videos we send out. Bob debates an evolutionary scientist. So you could subscribe. How much is a subscription to the videos? Or you can get this video for... You know, just go to our website, kgov.com, or call us at 800-8-NYART, and you could order this. $24.95 a month, and you could subscribe. We automatically mail you a video once a month, and it's just so much fun. So I want to quote to you from this article from Technical Journal, put out by Ken Ham's group, Answers in Genesis. The author of this article, his name is Chase Nelson. Now, he doesn't have a PhD, because he's a high school junior. He's a high school junior, and I read this article. Just reading Technical Journal is quite an experience. It's brilliant. It's written mostly by degreed scientists, and it's a tremendous resource for people who are creationists and like to learn more about science and be able to refute evolution. But I read this article, and it's a brilliant article, and I got to the end, and I just almost, I couldn't believe it was written by a high school junior. I was in shock because of how brilliant it is. So in this article, he writes about the genome, that's the human genetics, the DNA. The genome contains many more parts than just protein-coding genes. One such part includes introns, which are segments of DNA lying between other DNA segments that code for protein. When DNA is transcribed, the introns are spliced out. They're gotten rid of. They're thrown out. They're deleted. Because of this, they have long been assumed to lack function. However, if this is in fact the case, why have they been preserved over supposedly millions of years? Indeed, as noted in Scientific American, by the way, this was in 2003, this quote comes from, the preservation of introns through time suggests they do something indispensable. You get that word indispensable? Junk is not indispensable. It is possible that these DNA sequences, usually said to be worthless junk, may actually function as islands of DNA which encode non-coding RNA. This non-coding RNA is made from DNA but does not go on to become protein. Instead, it patrols the nucleus and acts as a regulator of other genes. And then quoting again Scientific American, in fact, the title of that article from 2003 in Scientific American was The Unseen Genome, Gems Among the Junk. Scientific American wrote this, that some scientists now suspect that much of what makes one person, one species, different from the next are variations in the gems hidden within our junk DNA, and they put junk in quotes. And then from just last year, Scientific American last year, that the secrets of this once thought junk DNA could be linked with several medical conditions, and they're talking about maybe lung cancer, prostate cancer, or autism, or schizophrenia, or B-cell lymphoma, and they're saying, look, we're just beginning to realize that these diseases might be because there's a mutation in the junk. Isn't that amazing? And so I just loved reading through this issue of TJ, Technical Journal, put out by Ken Ham. You got to go to his website and subscribe. It's just tremendous if you're into science. Okay, now we're about out of time. Next week, I'm going to be interviewed by Joseph Farah on Monday for WorldNet Daily, for their radio network. And it's going to be fun. And then later in the week, we'll have that for you here on Bob and Yurt Live. And WorldNet Daily is the world's largest independent news website. So we're excited that they're helping us get our message out about our open letter to James Dobson, which you can read on our website at kgov.com. And then tomorrow is Maranatha Christian Center's 25th anniversary party from 10 to 4. We're going to be there with our kids. It is going to be a blowout party, just the greatest time. Kids will love it. You'll love it. So come to Maranatha, 72nd and Oak, and check out Denver Bible Church this weekend, and happy Mother's Day.